Names. She brought Manon back through the winding ways in the dark, and left him in the dark of the undertomb, to dig the grave that must be there as proof to Cossel that the thief had indeed been punished. It was late, and she went straight to the small house to bed. In the night she woke suddenly. She remembered that she had left her cloak in the painted room. He would have nothing for warmth in that dank vault but his own short cloak. No bed but the dusty stone. A cold grave, a cold grave, she thought miserably. But she was too weary to wake up fully, and soon slipped back into sleep. She began to dream. She dreamt of the souls of the dead on the walls of the painted room, the figures like great, bedraggled birds, with human hands and feet and faces, squatting in the dust of the dark places. They could not fly. Clay was their food and dust their drink. They were the souls of those not reborn, the ancient peoples and the unbelievers, those whom the nameless ones devoured. They squatted all around her in the shadows, and a faint creaking or cheeping sound came from them now and then. One of them came up quite close to her. She was afraid at first and tried to draw away, but could not move. This one had the face of a bird, not a human face. But its hair was golden, and it said in a woman's voice, "Tanar," tenderly, softly, "Tanar." She woke. Her mouth was stopped with clay. She lay in a stone tomb underground. Her arms and legs were bound with grave clothes, and she could not move or speak. Her despair grew so great that it burst her breast open, and like a bird of fire, shattered the stone and broke out into the light of day. The light of day, faint in her windowless room. Really awake this time, she sat up, worn out by that night's dreaming, her mind befogged. She got into her clothes and went out to the cistern in the walled courtyard of the small house. She plunged her arms and face, her whole head, into the icy water until her body jumped with cold and her blood raced. Then, flinging back her dripping hair, she stood erect and looked up into the morning sky. It was not long past sunrise, a fair winter's day. The sky was yellowish, very clear. High up, so high he caught the sunlight and burned like a fleck of gold, a bird was circling, a hawk or desert eagle. "I am Tanar," she said, not aloud, and she shook with cold and terror and exultation. There, under the open sun-washed sky, I have my name back. I am Tanar. The golden fleck veered westward towards the mountains, out of sight. Sunrise gilded the eaves of the small house. Sheep bells clanked down in the folds. The smells of wood smoke and buckwheat porridge from the kitchen chimneys drifted on the fine, fresh wind. I am so hungry. How did he know? How did he know my name? Oh, I've got to go eat. I'm so hungry. She pulled up her hood and ran off to breakfast. Food, after 3 days of semi-fasting, made her feel solid, gave her ballast. She didn't feel so wild and light-hearted and frightened. She felt quite capable of handling Cossel after breakfast. She came up beside the tall, stout figure on the way out of the dining hall of the big house, and said in a low voice, "I have done away with the robber. What a fine day it is." The cold gray eyes looked sidelong at her from the black hood. I thought that the priestess must abstain from eating for 3 days after a human sacrifice. This was true. Arha had forgotten it, and her face showed that she had forgotten. "He is not dead yet," she said at last, trying to feign the indifferent tone that had come so easily a moment before. "He is buried alive, under the tombs, in a coffin. There will be some air. The coffin isn't sealed. It's a wooden one. It will go quite slowly. The dying. When I know he is dead, then I'll begin the fast."
"How will you know?"
Flustered, she hesitated again. I will know. My masters will tell me."
"I see. Where is the grave?"
"In the undertomb. I told Manon to dig it beneath the smooth stone." She must not answer so quickly in that foolish, appeasing tone. She must be on her dignity with Kossil.